Once again, we want to make sure everybody has a copy of the material. This is today's class. You may remember that our last passage that we dealt with was Acts chapter 6 and verse 7. That is a very unusual verse. Luke talks about people who were converted, and not only does he say people were converted, he talks about a great company of the priests. He says a great company of the priests were obedient to the faith. We delved into that not too much. We gave some simple reasons for that, but that's something I think that's worthy of more explanation. Why were men who were formerly priests so willing to obey the gospel? We talked about the fact that it could involve a career change. They might have had to leave their jobs, and some of them had other trades that maybe that could have been used in different areas. But still, it was going to be a big, big change. They're changing religion, just as some others were. I've given here about five reasons, and I'd like to tie in some passages as well. When you think about Old Testament priests, one of the things that stands out is that they were very, very conscious of evil. Now, you would hope that every Jew would have been conscious of that, but every priest, because of his work, would have been especially cognizant of that fact. And I think for that reason, Christianity would have made a lot of sense. Another thing that we'll see as we start looking at some texts, priests had clean garments. Now, you might think, well, everybody had clean clothes, but there were some special things when it came to priests. Priests were especially conscious about the animal blood that was being used. So when they start preaching and talking about the blood of the Son of God, I think for a lot of these guys, especially some of the Old Testament passages were brought forward, that would have made a lot of sense. They were used to offering acceptable offerings. They had some specific prohibitions about not serving idols and faithfulness when it came to doing God's will. So as you look at point three, let's go back to their being separate from evil. We've got a couple passages here that come from the book of Exodus, Exodus 29 and Exodus 30. So if you're a helper there, we'll ask you to get both of those. And then we'll also slip over to the book of Leviticus and look at Leviticus chapter 22, 4 to 6. Who wants to take first Exodus 29 and verse 4, and then we'll move you into Exodus 30. Exodus 29, 4, okay, Steve. And then we'll move you into Exodus 30, 20 and 21. And after we discuss that, Leviticus chapter 22, 4 to 6. Leviticus 22, 4 to 6. All right, Bonnie. In describing the dedication of priests, what did these men experience? Exodus 29 and verse 4.
And Aaron and his sons you shall bring to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and you shall wash them with water.
Okay. If you were a Jew and you saw that, okay, that would have made sense to you because you'd witnessed it. But if you were someone who had actually experienced it, you think you might have a slightly different view of things? I think so. So when you look at the Old Testament priests, there is the washing in Exodus chapter 29 and verse 4. So the Christians come along, they start talking about baptism. I think that would have been a very logical thing for a lot of the priests to look at and say, yes, we understand why that's important, how that works. Exodus chapter 30, verses 20 and 21. Steve, let's also look at those verses. Uh-huh.
Then you shall kill the ram and take some of its...
30, 20, and 21.
Oh, 30, okay. When they go into the tabernacle of meeting, or when they come near the altar to minister, to burn an offering made by fire to the Lord, they shall wash with water, lest they die. So they shall wash their hands and their feet, lest they die. And it shall be a statute forever to them, and to him and his descendants throughout their generations.
Thank you. Let's go back and fill in the blanks here. If priests did not do what before going into the tabernacle? If they did not wash, what was the consequence? God said you were going to die. Pretty serious consequence, isn't it? Do this, you're going to lose your life. If you were a priest, you knew about that instruction, you had followed that instruction. We've already had the instruction from Exodus chapter 29 and verse 4. Now we've got this additional instruction in Exodus chapter 30. Again, when they start talking about baptism as far as what this is going to do, from a priestly standpoint, this should have made a lot of sense to these guys. And then you have this other little detail as far as that same set of questions. How often did they engage in that activity? Perpetual statute throughout your generations? Was it ongoing or not? It was. Now, if you were a priest and you were coming from that background and you were listening to these Christians preach, you were accustomed to this, you'd witnessed this, you'd experienced this, what might be going through your mind? I think the first question that would have gone through my head was what? You're preaching about baptism.
Abortion.
Yes. How many times? How often? We knew how the Old Testament system worked, and boy, you know, we washed and washed and washed. How often do we have to do a washing? And if you were the Christian, what would you have said? One time. And if you were the priest, what do you think your thinking would have been? I think that would have been it. Wow, are you kidding me? How can it be that great? And your answer from the Christian perspective would be what? Who are we dealing with? The Son of God, Jesus Christ. So when you start putting these pieces together, it makes sense to me that yes, there were many who were obedient to the faith because this they would have jumped on, so to speak. All right, now, thinking about this from a priestly standpoint, you have to separate yourself from the evil. You want to disconnect yourself as much as possible. What did Jesus start preaching when it comes along? Matthew 5:8, Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the what in heart? Blessed are the pure in heart. Now, it might have been a little bit later before that, you know, connected with the priest, but you can see from their background that that would have made perfect sense to them. Yes, we want to be separate from evil. And then let's take a look at 2 Corinthians 7:1, Hebrews 10:22, and James chapter 4 and verse 8. 2 Corinthians 7:1, who wants to move over there and have that for us? All right, Jeff, let's take a look then at Hebrews 10:22. Glenda, were you raising a hand or? Okay. All right, Hebrews 10:22. All right, Kitty, we'll take you. And then after that, James 4 and verse 8. James 4, verse 8. Steve, James 4, 8. Let's go back to 2 Corinthians 7:1.
Having therefore these promises, dearly beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God.
Okay, now if you're a priest, thinking about this, and I'll deal a little bit more with this in tonight's lesson, but if you were a priest, that washing of the hands and that washing of the feet, would that really separate you from evil? No. We talk about certain actions today. For example, what would be a symbolic action in our society? Okay, that might be one. I promise to tell the truth. That would be one act of symbolism. Oh, okay, sure. You see somebody fold their hands, that's an act of symbolism. That's not going to make the prayer any more effective. What else as far as we think of a symbolic act?
Wearing pens of certain things that represent
okay.
Occasion.
All right. What about the shovel? You have a new wing to the hospital. You're going to build a new library. And you have everybody lined up out there and they've got their bronze or the gold-plated shovel and they all take the first shovel full of dirt. Is that really going to help in the construction project? It's not going to do a thing. But what's it designed to symbolize? We're ready to break ground. We're ready to put on the new wing to the hospital. We're ready to do. So we have a lot of symbolism. And for the Old Testament priest, you have a lot of symbolism. But then Christianity comes along and now they're talking about what? You know, the symbolism can still be important, but now we're talking about purity where? In the heart. Now it's not just the physical washing of the hands, it's not just the physical washing of the feet, but now we're talking about real substantive issues. Purity of heart, Matthew 5, verse 8. Let us cleanse ourselves of all defilement of flesh and spirit, 2 Corinthians 7:1. If you were a priest, or if you were, to put it in more modern terms, if you were a preacher, and you had been part of this Old Testament system, and now somebody comes along and says, there is this new way. And the Bible does talk about the new and living way. You would be thinking, oh, hey, yeah, I've been looking for that. I'm waiting for that. Tell me more about that. That is very, very attractive. Hebrews 10:22.
And fill here with the true heart and full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our body washed with pure water.
Okay, let's read that one more time. You did a great job. I'm going to stop you along the way, though. Stop right there. Let us draw where? Let us draw near. Now, if you're a priest, you're thinking what? About God. We're going to be aside from the high priest, we're going to be about as near as anybody, and that's still kind of scary for us. But the Hebrews writer says, let us, let everybody where? Draw near. Wow, what a system. Let's read a little bit more, Kitty. Wow, a full assurance of faith. We got rid of that Old Testament system where, you know, things were kind of shaky. And then what else?
Having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience.
There was, with the Old Testament system, what? A what of sin every year? A remembrance. And if you're preaching to these priests, you can say this system, the New Testament system, it takes it all away. It cleans everything out. Anything else, sir?
And our bodies washed with pure water.
Okay, again there, going back to baptism. And then James 4:8, and we'll see if you have anything to add or ask over that section.
Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded.
Okay, that kind of sums up the ideas that we were talking about. Draw near to God. He's going to draw near to you. You can be completely purged. You can be completely free of your sins. So when you start looking at what these priests were being told, it makes perfect sense that many of them did want to become Christians. Anything that you want to add or ask over the first section? Let's look at section 2. Here we begin to think about priests and the garments that they had. So if you get the first reference, Ezekiel 44, we'll ask you after that to go back two chapters to Ezekiel 42. Ezekiel 44, verse 18, who wants to be your helper? All right, Lois, Bonnie, if you will turn over to the book of Haggai and find Haggai chapter 2, verses 11 to 13. We'll get over there in a little bit. And then we'll also look at Zechariah chapter 3 and verses 3 and 4. That'll be before Bonnie. Who wants to be your Zechariah reference reader? All right, Jeff, Zechariah 3, 3 to 4. All right, let's go back to Ezekiel, chapter 44, verse 18.
Linen turbans shall be on their heads, and linen undergarments shall be on their loins. They shall not gird themselves with anything which makes them sweat.
Now, isn't that an interesting reference? God said, if you are a priest, you want clothing which is not going to cause you to sweat. Again, we may not fully understand that, but I think you get back into the idea of that exterior, that ceremonial cleanliness, and so to speak. But with the New Testament, it wipes that all away. So you have that. And then if we back up two chapters, Ezekiel chapter 42, verses 13 and 14.
Then he said to me, the north chambers and the south chambers, which are opposite the separate area, they are the holy chambers where the priests who are near to the Lord shall eat the most holy things. There they shall lay the most holy things, the grain offering, the sin offering, and the guilt offering, for the place is holy. When the priests enter, then they shall not go out into the outer court from the sanctuary without laying there their garments in which they minister, for they are holy. They shall put on other garments, then they shall approach that which is for these people.
Okay, now let me break that down a little bit. Here the priests are, they're in this sacred, they're in this holy area, they do their work, and then they need to, obviously they need to go back out and begin to interact with the other people, they need to go back out and resume their daily lives. So they're in here, they have on the special clothing, but God said before you go back outside and you start interacting with the common people again and the common things and you resume your daily routine, what do you need to do? You've got to change your clothes. You leave these holy clothes inside. Now, for us, you know, you might find, especially with kids, they change their clothes six times a day. And if a congregation meets twice on Sunday, you might have some people, they show up wearing this on Sunday morning, and then they come back on Sunday night, and then they're wearing something else. Not because they spilled food on it, just maybe because they wanted to dress a little differently, you know, however that works. But with the priest, that wasn't so much. That was not something that was an option. God said, this is the way that it needs to be. Once again, if you're a priest, you're thinking you're now back to the exterior stuff. If you're thinking through this as a priest, you're hearing these Christians go around and talk about the Son of God, and you know he's come and he's given a different religious system, and you're thinking, okay, before I had to have those clothes that I couldn't sweat in. And before, I had to have those clothes that I had to take off before I could go out and be the you know around the common people. One of the things, if I had been a priest, that I might be observing is, hey, this guy, when he was preaching, he was wearing, let's just say, slacks and a shirt. And now he's out over there, you know, chopping wood, and he's wearing the same slacks and shirt. As a priest, I'm thinking what? Yeah, it looks like he's either not following the new religion, or it looks like the new religion doesn't have those kinds of clothing rules. So as you take that detail as well, you can see perhaps that that's clicking in the minds of these guys and thinking, hey, this is a whole lot easier. Now, it may not be right. That still has to be proven in the minds of these fellows. But if it is right, it's going to be a whole lot easier than the system that we had before. And what a great break for us. Anything that you want to add or ask before we look at this in a little more detail? Okay. Let's see what we have over here in the book of Zechariah, chapter 3, verses 3 and 4.
Now Joshua was clothed with filthy garments and stood before the angel. And he answered and spake unto those that stood before him, saying, take away the filthy garments from him. And unto him he said, behold, I have caused thine iniquity to pass in thee, and I'll clothe thee with change of raiment.
Okay, again, I think you have here a passage which is filled with a lot of symbolism, but still you have the idea here that we've been looking at, and that is physical clothing. It's dirty, and it needs to be changed out. We do not have that in the spiritual realm. We can... you ever seen anybody worship God in dirty clothing? Anybody ever seen that? I have. I tell you, I've been in some countries. Ukraine is probably the worst, where the coal miners came in. You've got a guy who's been out maybe wearing the same duds for a week, maybe two. And the coal miners over there, hard, dirty, nasty jobs. And they might clean the coal off the face, but you have some people that don't have deodorant or they don't wear deodorant. And they come in after a couple weeks in the same clothes in the working in the coal mines. They're ripe. They're really ripe. And you sit next to that guy in services, or even if you're on the back pew and he's on the front, I mean, you get a really good whiff. And it will just about knock you over. But do you think that his worship is going to be as good as the guy who showered and got the cologne on and has the deodorant on and doesn't smell in a bad way? Absolutely. But for the priests, it was much different. Anything that you want to ask before we deal with Haggai? Okay, let's go back and look at Haggai chapter 2, verses 11 through 13. This is another verse we have to unpack it a little bit, but when you start thinking about the priests, it's one more passage where you step back and you think, huh, wow, their life really was unusual, strange, and in many cases burdensome. Haggai 2, 11 to 13.
Shall it be holy? And the priest answered and said, no. Then said Haggai, if one that is unclean by a dead body touch any of these, shall it be unclean? And the priest answered and said, it shall be unclean.
Okay, I'm going to talk about that, but I also want to head somebody over to the book of Malachi. Malachi chapter 3, 2 and 3. Will somebody be headed over there and read that in a little bit? Last book of the Bible in the Old Testament? All right, Freddie will take that, Malachi 3, 2 to 3, in just a minute. Now let's go back here to what we have in Haggai 2, 11 to 13. Here you have the priest who's got some meat. And God said, you don't want to do what? As you got your apron full of meat. You don't want to brush against anything. You don't want to touch anything. That was a problem. Can you imagine being under a system where you don't want to touch anything religiously? Now, some people might do that. For example, if you are in the medical profession, you know, you've got your scrubbing done, you know, you don't want to go out there and touch something that you shouldn't. There might be some other professions where maybe you're all dressed up for a wedding. The bride certainly wouldn't want to come through a greasy doorway and possibly get the dress full of grease or anything like that. But in the religious realm, God gave some instructions where you don't want to brush up against anything. If I'm in that system, and I'm really honest, if there's a way out of that system, and I can still please God, I think I'm going to take it, don't you? When you start looking at all the various rules and regulations that the priests had, this was really a burden for them in some respects. And when the New Testament system comes along and they begin to hear about it, you can understand, I think, more and more why they were willing to run in force to it. Made a lot of sense. Anything that went out or asked before we take a look at our Malachi 3, 2 and 3 reference? Yes.
I mean, that really magnifies
it. It does. When you start looking at all of the things that they had to follow, it was kind of like, ooh, this is going to be my life? And it was, for many people, for many years.
Nerve-wracking.
It was. All right, let's go back, Freddie. Malachi 3, 2 to 3. Okay, now I'm going to stop you right there. I want you to read that once again, the last few words. He, this is talking about Christ. He is like what? He is like? And?
Launderer's soap.
Now keep that in mind. Launderer's soap. Okay? Next verse 2.
And he will sin as a refiner and a purifier of silver. He will purify the sons of Levi and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer to the Lord an offering in righteousness.
Okay, now that passage looks forward to the New Testament, the things that Jesus would do. Now, you could look at all the descriptions there, but the one that I want to key in is that Jesus was going to be like laundry soap. Now, if you've never thought about that, that's what that particular passage says in the Old Testament. Now, when you think about laundry soap, what are some of the ads? How do they advertise that if they want to get your money?
Whiter than snow.
All right. Whiter than snow might be one advertisement that they use. What else? Takes all the stains out. That's going to be the general thrust, that this is going to get you completely clean. It's interesting to me, some translations would use the word fuller soap. And you remember the fuller, he was the one who was supposed to get the garments, you know, as white as anybody possibly could. So if you were a priest and you were thinking about that, there's somebody who's going to come along who's going to make the garments whiter than snow, get all the stains out. It's kind of like, well, that's good news, isn't it? Can you imagine what would have been your life had you been a priest? What do you think you're going to go home in every day? Every day you're dealing with the animals, what do you think you're going to have? You're going to have dirty clothes. You're going to have that blood on it. It's going to be a constant reminder. So we're going to talk about that a little bit more under the next section. But we've got Malachi 3. Anybody remember what we find in Ephesians 5, 25 and through 27? The church is compared to a bride. And Paul said that he might do what to it? That he might sanctify it. He's cleansed it. That he might present the church to himself, a glorious church, not having what? Spot or wrinkle or any such thing. That sounds like laundry soap, doesn't it? No spots. Maybe not so much when you deal with the wrinkles, laundry soap, but no spots. It's going to be completely pure. And then over there in the book of Revelation, Revelation chapter 7, verses 13 and 14, John talks about Christians in this life. He says they've come out of the great tribulation, that is sin. They've washed their robes in what? Remember the blood of the Lamb. And what color are they? They're white. People are completely freed from sin. So once again, as the priests begin connecting this information, going back to the rules that they had to have as far as garments, that passage back there in Malachi, you can see the light bulb starting to come on, I think, for a lot of these guys. Anything that you want to add or ask before we move into the next section? Okay. Let's talk about priests and being sanctified by the blood of animals. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 29 and look at verses 19 through 21. Let's see where the blood was placed. Exodus 29, 19 to 21. Gary?
And thou shalt take the other ram, and Aaron and his son shall put their hands upon the head of the ram. Then thou shalt kill the ram, and take up his blood, and put it upon the tip of the right ear of Aaron, and upon the tip of the right ear of his son, and upon the thumb of their right hand, and upon the great toe of their right foot, and sprinkle the blood upon the altar round about. And thou shalt take the blood that is upon the altar and of the anointing oil, and sprinkle it upon Aaron and upon his garments and upon his sons and upon the garments of his sons with him. And he shall be hallowed in his garments and his sons' garments with him.
Okay. There are a few people who are pretty enthused about seeing blood. You also have some people who are not so enthused about seeing blood. The people who are really queasy, they'll just go ahead and faint and just kind of have to lay them out on the floor. I'm not really in either category. I mean, I'm not going to faint. I don't really particularly care to see it or deal with it. But I mean, if it's there, let's go ahead and deal with it and let's move on. But if you were a priest, as you look at Exodus 29, where was the blood going to be? On your thumb?
Ear.
Yeah, on your ear, on your toe. You're going to end up with some of the garments. And then if that's not enough, throw somewhere. Splash it also on the altar. If you were someone who were exposed to that, you know, again, you probably would get used to it, the smell and the sight and so forth, but that just strikes us as gross, I think, for the most part. And you have somebody coming along and saying, hey, let's also talk about blood, but the blood that I want to talk about came from whom? Jesus. Where was it shed? On the cross. How much of it do you have to wear? Zero. And how effective is it? 100%. It never needs to be repeated. That's one of the great points in the book of Hebrews. He died once for all time. That death never has to be repeated. That blood was shed, the sacrifice was made, and it never needs to be done again. Wow! So again, you can, I think, see with these priests, it was just a magnificent message. You also have here Hebrews 9, verse 13, and then Hebrews chapter 9, verses 14 and 15. Anybody turn there and willing to read? We'll start with Hebrews chapter 9, verse 13. All right, Steve, let's go back to you. Thank you. Are there some tasks that you do that you just kind of sigh about? Oh, Here it is again, but we'll do it. Anybody want to admit to one of those jobs?
Dusting.
All right, dusting. All right, it's kind of like, oh, you know, we can write the name in the, you know, TV cabinet again, so we better get off the dust rag. What else? Tasks that you do that you know that needs done and just kind of sigh about. All right, clean the bathrooms. Maybe it's clean the toilet or clean the countertop, clean the mirror, but cleaning the bathrooms. This is almost like a game show. What else? Tasks that you do.
Every Tuesday I clean the bird cage.
All right. Maybe that's even, I think, a better illustration than we've had so far. But there is, I mean, it's well, just because it's kind of nasty. Okay, it's, I mean, you clean the dust, you clean the toilet, that could be nasty, I guess. But anyway, cleaning the bird cage. A nasty job. Anything else? All right, you're now back to animals again. But you do this job, you know it needs to be done. Can you imagine if you were a priest? Another animal to sacrifice. You know, here's another one. And I can't imagine that, you know, time after time after time. And you might be asking, when am I old enough to stop doing this? When am I going to die? Isn't there a better way? And these Christians, they start coming along and they start saying, and I can envision, since these fellows were inspired, that maybe there was an occasion or two where they actually had a Bible study with priests, called several of them together, and said, we'd like to tell you about a new way, a new system of religion. You've been doing all these things, and all these things were leading up to this, and this eliminates all that. Can you imagine if they did such a thing, the kinds of questions? I can see those priests just popping off one question. Do you mean it means this? We're no longer going to have to do this, and we're free from this, all these things? Yes, 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 and yes. And remember when I talked about Acts 6-7, I said the imperfect tense is used. You have there almost a steady stream of priests. Something has to account for that. And like I say, when you start unfolding what we have here, as far as Bible verses about priests, it makes all the sense in the world to me. Let's look at verses 14 and 15 as well, Hebrews 9. Then we'll pause again, see if you have some questions. Thank you. It's not used there, at least in that translation, but throughout the book of Hebrews, you have the word better being used. You have a better covenant, better system, better promises, and that was one of the things that very likely those priests heard. This is a better system. This is what was promised by Jeremiah over in Jeremiah chapter 31, and you can now be members of it just as well as anyone else. Anything you want to add or ask over this section? Okay, let's pick up with our new area. This is going to be marked as point 18. Priests offered acceptable offerings. There were some things that were not allowed. This comes from Leviticus 22:20. And then let's also look at Malachi chapter 2, 13 through 16. Leviticus 22:20. Who wants to go back there and be ready for that in a minute? All right, Betty. And then Glenda, if you wouldn't mind going back to Malachi and look at Malachi 2, 13 through 16 for us. Let's start with Leviticus 22:20. Okay, now we sometimes talk about classes, sermons, unacceptable worship to God. Is that an important point? Some things are not acceptable to God. For example, false worship or the attitudes in worship if they're false. Those are critical points as far as worship. Now when you look at Leviticus 22:20 and you start looking at the Old Testament priests, what was one of the key things that they were taught? There are some sacrifices which are unacceptable to God. Do you think that they had to deal with that, maybe on at least a few occasions? Yeah. I imagine that there were some fellows who thought, boy, you know, I got my three-legged sheep over here, I got the blemish in the sheep, and I can't do anything with it, so let's see if we can get that by the old priest. I imagine there were some people who tried that, but they had to be alert to that. So they are accustomed to that. Now when they make the transformation into Christianity, what are they mindful of? God is a God who, when it comes to the sacrifices that we offer, what do we want to do? We don't want to have any blemishes. If these guys went out and started to preach, if these guys went out and started to teach Bible classes, I think they could have been some of the best Bible class teachers some of the best preachers for a long time, because of that Old Testament background that they had. They were coming from a system where when they started to see how the New Testament, in many ways, pulled from the Old Testament, we think about Paul as far as being someone who probably did this with great regularity, and I'm sure that's true. But the Old Testament priests could have also been very, very effective. Now, let's build on that a little bit more. Let's go back. At first, you may not see the connection, but after we put a couple things together, I think it'll become very clear. Malachi 2, 13 through 16.
And this second thing you do, you cover the Lord's altar with tears, with weeping and groaning, because he no longer regards the offering or accepts it with favor from your hand. But you say, why does he not? Because the Lord was witness between you and the wife of your youth, to whom you have been faithless, though she is your companion, wife by covenant. Did he not make them one with a portion of the Spirit in their union? With a portion of the Spirit in their union, and what was the one God seeking? Godly offspring. So guard yourselves and your spirit, and let none of you be faithless to the wife of your youth.
Okay. Some would say, don't deal with her treacherously. They were dealing treacherously. They were dealing in an unfaithful way with the wives by divorce. They had some bad attitudes. They were not doing things in a good way. Priests also served as teachers of the Israelites. And as you go back and you start looking at passages like Malachi chapter 2, they knew that some of the stuff that had been tried with God before was not going to go over very well. Malachi 2 being a very good example of that. So you come forward to the New Testament era. And you start looking, for example, at Matthew chapter 5, verses 22 through 24. What does Jesus say about treating others? You go the
extra mile.
You treat people as you want to be treated. The priests had already seen that to some degree in the Old Testament, you know, with divorce and worship and interaction with others. The prophets, they had talked about the need for justice and those kinds of things. So when Christians began to teach that kind of thing, yes, it made perfect sense to them. Leviticus 7, 17 and 18, and then we'll contrast that with John chapter 4, verse 24. Leviticus 7, 17 and 18. That'll be, all right, Catherine? John 4, 24. Gary, did you flash a hand? Okay. Leviticus 7, 17 and 18. When you're ready, Catherine. Read that last part again. The person that eats it?
And the person who eats of it shall bear guilt.
Okay, shall bear guilt. Now, God said, here's a sacrifice. If it's not eaten by when?
Third day.
Do what with it?
Burn it.
Destroy it with fire. Somebody says, well, hey, that's good meat. Day 4, still looks good. I'm hungry. I need some more meat. I'm going to use it on day 4. God says what? You shall bear the guilt. Why? Because God said by day 3, it needs to be gone. If it's not gone, burn it up. He gave a specific rule associated with worship. That rule was known. That rule was abided by the priests if they were doing what was right. Then Jesus comes along. What's he say in John 4, 24?
God is a spirit.
Now, if you were a priest, do you think John 4:24 would have made sense to you? With what God said about that sacrifice, this is what happens on day 3. If it still is there, you burn it up. You don't eat it. This is what needs to be done. So yes, that should have made great sense to them. God has some rules about worship. Any Jew should have understood that, but especially from the people who were priests. Anything you want to add or ask before we look at idols? Steve? Yes. Yeah, and there is a great connection there, and one just naturally leads to the other, and it's really important to make that connection, even now. Okay, let's take a look at idolatry for just a minute. Ezekiel 44, 10 to 14. And then we'll, I think, be able as a class to pull out Matthew 6:24, and then 1 John 2:15-16, we'll have that read. Ezekiel 44:10-14. All right, Jeff and Lois, if we can turn you over to the book of 1 John, we'll look at that second chapter, verses 15 and 16, after we have Jeff. Jeff, again, 44th chapter of Ezekiel 10 to 14.
And the Levites that are gone away, far from me, when Israel went astray, which went astray away from me after their idols, they shall even bear their iniquity. Yet they shall be ministers in my sanctuary, having charge at the gates of the house and ministering to the house. They shall slay the burnt offering and the sacrifice for the people, and they shall stand before them to minister unto them. Because they ministered unto them before their idols, and caused the house of Israel to fall into iniquity, therefore have I lifted up my hand against them, saith the Lord God, and they shall bear their iniquity. And they shall not come near unto me to do the office of a priest unto me, nor to come near to any of my holy things in the most holy place. But they shall bear their shame and their abominations which they have committed. But I will make them keepers of the charge of the house for all the service thereof and for all that should be done therein.
All right. Many years before Jesus came into the world, Ezekiel 44, God's priests had been involved with idolatry. God said, that is an abomination. You've messed up badly, and I'm going to punish you. If we isolate that fact, it may not mean too much to us. But when you take that and you compare that with what we have in, for example, Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24, Jesus said, you cannot serve, anybody remember? Two masters. Can't serve God and mammon or money. What's money? Or what can money be? It can be an idol, right? Paul identifies that in Colossians chapter 3. The priest should have been familiar with that. That Old Testament information, that Old Testament example, and that is not the only place that we could go back to. But for them, it was, if we're going to be a priest in the service of God, we've got to be careful about our connection to the world, right? What message do you think was preached by the early Christians? Well, let's see. 1 John chapter 2, 15 and 16.
Do not love the world, nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world.
Okay, any Jew should have been able to understand that point and principle. But any priest, that message should have really registered. And then finally, 28 through 31, faithful priests did God's will. 1 Samuel 2:35, and then we'll take a look at John 14:21-23. We should be able to know what Matthew 7:21-23 says. 1 Samuel 2:35, and then John 14:21-23, our last two references. Who wants to take care of 1 Samuel 2? All right, Steve. And then John 14:21-23. All right, Glenda. 2:35, 1 Samuel. Okay, this is not, sorry, thank you. This is not the only verse that we could have cited, but this is sufficient. God talks about what kind of priest. I want a faithful priest. And that you can find in other passages in the Old Testament. All right, if that's what the Old Testament priests were familiar with, God wants us to be faithful. Remember the story about Nadab and Abihu? Leviticus chapter 10? I mean, they were not faithful. They died, but faithful priests. All right, Glenda, John 14:21-23. If you were talking to priests in this day and time, you could have gone back and made all the points and maybe some others that we didn't make. And then as you bring your sermon to a close, how could you have ended it? As a priest, you also, as a former priest, if you're going to become a Christian, you also need to be what? You need to be faithful to God. They would have understood that. Jews should have understood that because of their history, but especially the priests. Remember, too, in Matthew 7, 21 to 23, not everyone that says unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he that what? He that does the will of my Father who is in heaven, the one who is faithful to God. That message should have resonated with every single priest. So again, I think as you look at Acts 6, 7, many priests in perfect tense, continuous action, were obeying the faith. When you start going back and looking at the background associated with the priest, it makes perfect sense because of what these guys did and all the history they had.